Spelman or bust.
Spelman or bust, baby.
Welcome to Kelly Corrigan Wonders. I'm Kelly Corrigan, and today I'm wondering what happens when you put thousands of talented young women on a single campus and tell them they are part of something historic, a special and inspiring place attended by women like Alice Walker and Stacey Abrams. My guest today is Dean P., also known as Dean Desiree Pettisclow. She's a professor and a dean, of course, who has been on the faculty at Spelman College for over two decades. We'll also hear from some very powerful, charismatic young students who are currently taking her class. So join us. We'll be right back with Kelly Corrigan Wonders. Hi, Tam.
Hi, Kel. Here we are again.
I know. We're on our way to Spelman, and I'm just looking at this con law class, and it says, "This is not a lecture course. The student should not scribble furiously to record everything that the instructor says. The instructor may take both sides of an argument. This may cause confusion." Isn't that like a great setup? Like, stop with your do-gooder A-plus student. Yes, totally. Be in it. Yeah, be ready to be surprised. Welcome back to Kelly Corrigan Wonders. I'm Kelly Corrigan, and today we are on the campus of Spelman College, the famous and inspired HBCU in Atlanta, Georgia. My guest is Desiree Pettisclow. She's an award-winning author and professor who has been a member of the Spelman faculty for over 20 years. She currently serves both as Dean of Undergraduate Studies and an associate professor in the Political Science Department. Having been on campus for two decades, I felt like Dean P. would be able to give me some insight as to how students have changed over the years, where they've been, and where they're headed. But before we jump in with Dean P., I wanted to share a conversation I had with one of her students who tracked me down during a break in her constitutional law class. Hi.
Hi.
What's your name?
Indy.
Where are you from?
Alexandria, Virginia.
Oh, right on. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your college experience in three adjectives.
Transformative, challenging, and I want to use the word real, but I'm only saying real because I feel like college has opened my eyes to a lot of like real life experiences that I probably wouldn't have gotten without coming to college, whether it's Spelman or not. So I just think real as in like life kind of gets really real when you start school.
What's an example?
I think for the first time for a lot of us, like, you know, we're away from home. And with that, you know, like, yeah, you have the mental turmoil that just comes from not being where you're comfortable. But financially, you're trying to eat. You're trying to be able to go out. You're trying to have the best clothes, the best hairstyles. And I think all of that adds up. And then also from a mental standpoint, being 20 or 21, just the pressures of being that age, I think, contribute. So, yeah, it's just real. Like, you're really put to the test in a whole lot of regards.
How do you feel you're doing on the test?
I think I'm passing. Uh-huh. I think I'm passing with, like, a C.
Really?
Right now, I think I'm passing with a C. I think after this semester, I'll have more of a handle. I think it's my junior year. So, same in high school, they tell you, like, your junior year is your most transitional kind of period because you're either about to, you know, go to grad school or finish up whatever you have going on here. So I think this semester, as far as my time management goes, probably being like a little more disciplined with my money, I will probably be finishing a lot better than a C by the end of the semester.
What is the biggest surprise about college so far?
Not everybody's raised the same. I think, you know, you come into a space for the first time, like, it's a melting pot, right? Like, you have people from all different walks of life, from all different places, and I think sometimes personalities mesh, but sometimes they clash. And that's one of the things I think that I've noticed. Like, obviously, I love my institution, I love Spelman, but I think that with that, it's a learning experience. Like, you have to learn that just because someone doesn't think like you or operate like you doesn't mean that it's wrong. It's just their way. It's just different. And coming from, you know, your hometown, you're probably used to a lot of similarities, but that's not the case here.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Like, the variety is greater than you anticipated.
Yes. But, I mean, again, there's, I guess, a negative aspect there when it comes to forcing yourself to kind of learn and grow. But I would say from the positive, you're forcing yourself to learn and grow, if that makes sense.
Right, you know? Right. Cuts both ways.
Exactly.
What has been the biggest joy of college?
I think the connections I've made, you know, I've met people that I'm able to call like lifelong friends, I hope. I think in college, the same way I said earlier, like you endure a lot, you go through a lot mentally, physically, emotionally, financially, et cetera. I feel like part of what makes all that so special and worth it is having those people to go through it with you.
Yeah.
It's kind of that bond that like nobody else will understand except for the people that are in it during that time. And I think I surrounded myself with a good group of people who we kind of just all see each other. Because I think ultimately like that's what we all want is to be seen at college.
That's beautiful. So,
thanks.
What are you going to do when you grow up?
Such a loaded question.
I know, it's terrible. What are you going to do after you graduate?
Yeah, I think I'm going to take a gap year. Initially, the plan was to go right into law school, but I think kind of how I spoke to that mental piece, I want to make sure that I'm mentally sound to go to law school. I also know that I want to travel more. I'm minor in Spanish, and I've been to Jamaica, Costa Rica, but I want to expand that. So I think I may use this next, well, I'm a junior, so following my senior year, I may use that to travel and just kind of immerse myself in more cultures before I hunker down and say, like, this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Right now, though, I mean, to kind of answer your question, I mean, I'm very passionate about social justice and policy and advocacy. I think it's just figuring out how to channel all of that into one thing. So,
yeah. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
You're awesome.
Thank you.
Here's my conversation with Dean Desiree Pettisclow. So, Dean P., where and how did you learn to learn?
Well, my mother was an educator, and so we started at home. She wanted us to know how to spell our names, and my last name is Pettisclow, and so she wanted to make sure we knew how to spell that, and so she started at home with us, and by the time we got to kindergarten, first grade, you know, the groundwork was already laid. We were well on our way reading and spelling.
How do you say it?
Pettisclow.
That's a name. That's a name and a half. It's Cajun?
Creole.
Creole. Uh-huh. Where'd you grow up?
Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Uh-huh. How were your schools? How were your early schooling experiences?
It was just on the heels of desegregation. And so my mother was a school teacher and didn't want us in public schools. So we went to Berean Seventh-day Adventist, a parochial school. We weren't Adventists, but that was the best school in town. And so my parents sacrificed and sent my sister and I there. And we stayed there through junior high and then went to high school at a public institution.
Do you remember the first time you were in a class and thought, oh, I like this. I like this subject. There's things happening for me internally. My switch is being flipped on.
You know, that was every day at Berean. There were small classes, one-on-one instruction with your faculty. We called our faculty sister this and sister that. And so, you know, we excelled there.
Yeah. Did you take a poli-sci class in high school or not until college?
I did civics in high school, and as I can remember, it was with one of the coaches, and so I didn't care for it. I didn't care for it at that time, but it was when I got to college that I think my spark for political science was ignited. Once I got there, I took the first class as national government, and everything clicked then.
Yeah. What about national government caught your ear?
I think it helped me to see how things worked and how everything fit together.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, it placed me into the political system. Okay?
Uh-huh.
And I think that was my first awareness that I could really make a difference. I can remember in high school, I think I was 18 when I started college, I believe. And I can remember registering to vote.
Yeah.
But I don't think I really understood what that meant until I got in that national government class and I could see that I could make a difference.
You know,
just me, I could make a difference.
Do you remember learning anything in college about the way America works that you thought, this is just maddening. We must change this.
Well, I think it was the Electoral College, you know, because technically the voters could vote one way and the electors could go to the state capitol and vote a totally different way because most states didn't bind the electors to follow the electoral vote. And so I was thinking, that's just crazy.
Right.
That's just crazy. And
you could override the popular vote. It's just nuts.
Right. And so that just seems so archaic, to think that the people weren't wise enough to vote their interest or to know who would represent their interest the best.
When you watch elections now, what makes you mad? I can't describe Dean P's face when I ask that question, but...
Well, it's so confounding that voters will sometimes not vote in their best interest.
Yes.
They buy into the rhetoric and they don't analyze it. They don't think about it. They just accept it. And half of it's misinformation, but they don't critically assess it in any way. And so they go to the polls and they vote against their own best interest, And I think if we would just talk and listen, think, reflect, we might have a different outcome.
Is that your goal in the classroom, to create the kinds of citizens that will be out there thinking and talking and reflecting in a way that's more evidence-based and less, less vulnerable to manipulation or a great slogan?
Most definitely. I can remember, it had to have been the Hillary Clinton election. When she didn't win, the students were devastated. And, they needed a day off from class. And so we gathered to talk about the election. And so we tried to help them to understand that there were some good things. We didn't win. Your candidate didn't win, but there were some good things because more young people had voted in that election than we had seen before. We saw more Asian Americans voting in the election, and that's a good thing, bringing people into the electoral system and seeing different participants voice their opinion, their political opinion. And so we tried to get them to understand that all was not lost.
Yeah.
And that we needed to continue that momentum.
Yeah.
So that, in the next election, we might win that election.
Your students are special.
Yes.
Tammy and I spent the afternoon at Spelman yesterday. We dropped in on your class. We talked to three or four girls. And then we went over to the student union and got a cup of tea and ended up in this conversation with these three young women that are in it to win it.
All right, so I'm sitting with some Spelman girls in the, where are we? In the
Lower Manly. Near the pod.
Yeah. Lower Manly near the pod.
We're podding in the pod.
Really. Tell us your name and where you're from.
Hi, I'm Hadia. I am a sophomore health sciences pre-med major from Texas.
Hi, I'm Jewel. I am a political science major on the pre-law track from Philadelphia.
Hi, I'm Jaden. I'm a political science major, journalism minor from Philadelphia, West Philly.
Right on.
How
about the Eagles?
Yes, we
talk about it. Talk about it.
We're going.
Tell me three adjectives to describe your college experience so far.
I don't have three right now, but the one that came to my head was eye-opening. I think it's eye-opening in a positive and negative perspective because for freshman year, we had to take a class called African Diaspora in the World, and that gave me so many perspectives on how life is in reality. Like, when you're in high school, sometimes, you see things with social media. It's easy to see things as a teenager, but most parents, they try to shelter you from the bad things, and it's like you see the history and you see how life was formed. And I just feel like being here at Spelman gives me the opportunities to expand my knowledge on so many perspectives and categories. And it's just like, wow, this is who the world is. But not only do they educate us, they tell us where we can take place in the world and say, this is how you can change it. And then I just feel like I spoke to my professor. Some professors are alum and they went here and they're saying everyone across the board says when I left Spelman, I felt like I could do anything. And I truly feel like that. Like if I wanted to run for president tomorrow, I truly believe I could win with the best campaign. Like, no, I just feel like, no, I feel like Spelman has taught me that. And it's just like, they want you to stand so true to yourself and believe that you can be the best you can be with a great foundation.
I would say my three words would be competitive, which I didn't really think it would be, but, well, I did think it would be, but I didn't think it would be like this. But I would say competitive. I would say
the girls here are in it to win it.
Oh, everybody's yes. in it to win.
We're all good.
Every
and
single
we all
person
got accepted,
is in it to
so
win.
It's like, you know.
It would also keep you on your A game.
It
though,
does.
Because, like, my sisters are up on the up and up. Yeah. Like, I'm right. not, you know, I follow their lead. Mm-hmm. And I aspire to be like them. Mm-hmm. Girls that are even in the same classes as me, girls that are above me, I aspire to be like them. So yeah. I would say inspirational.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That was a good one. Yeah. That was a good one.
Inspirational for sure. And then I would say fun. I have the best time here every day, whether it's classes, whether it's just sitting here in the pod. It's a great time every
yeah,
day.
Yeah, you guys have good energy. Like, I go to college with you.
I'm going to have to steal that inspirational, transformative, and expansive. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've grown so much in terms of my ability to speak up for myself, ability to recognize right from wrong or what feels right and wrong to me. Yeah, just personally, I feel like I've healed a lot from things that I didn't know I needed to heal from just because I've been exposed to so many different people and experiences and lessons and literally.
In just these 2 years, I feel like I've changed so much. So I can't wait to see when I'm walking across
holds.
That stage senior year.
Right.
I mean, they are going to take over.
Yes. Yes. And they have such great examples. You know, they saw their Spelman sister, Stacey Abrams, just lighting up the political world in both of the elections. She didn't win, but I think it gave the young women an opportunity to see that they could make a difference. You know,
so these girls that we talked to yesterday, there's no doubt in their mind that they will make a mark.
Yes.
And there's actually no doubt in our mind either. After talking to them, I was like, move over.
Right.
Because they're here and they're ready.
They drink the blue Kool-Aid and they're off. They're off to change the world. And it's so wonderful just to sit back and to watch them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They also talked about what it feels like to be in an all-Black place where they don't have to devote so much mind share to navigating the cultural responses to them.
Right, yes.
And this one student said, oh, and also, I've never felt more beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What's your impression of what is possible at a place like Spelman, which is all women and all Black, that is not possible in other environments?
Well, you know, as the young women said, they could be themselves. You know, they don't have to impress anybody. You know, they all have come. They're the top of their class. They are go-getters. And they come to Spelman, and there are other women just like them all reaching for the same thing. And so they can learn together. They can learn from each other. They don't have to be looking over their shoulder to think, oh, they're coming for me. And so they can relax. And I think that allows them to really open up, to learn. You know, because they don't have to prove anything.
Yeah, and it just gives you back mind share.
Yes.
You know, we had this great woman on. Her name's Lisa Feldman Barrett. She's a neuroscientist, and she said vigilance is metabolically expensive.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about it when we were listening to those incredible young women, that this is a place where they don't have to be so vigilant.
Right.
And that creates space for creativity and collaboration. They also said that it's pretty competitive. Like that everyone who ends up on this campus is gunning for it.
Yes.
And so you can't really coast. Right. Whereas I did get the impression, same feeling you get at an Ivy League school, where
some of them may have been coasting in high school. They may have been the best student in their class, and it wasn't that hard. And then they get onto a campus where everyone was the best student in their class, right. And all of a sudden there's this recalibration that's like, all right,
that's right,
I better sit up straight and throw my shoulders back and show up to class and, you know.
I think that's right. I think they get there during their first year, their first semester, and they start off thinking they can coast, and they get into their African diaspora in the world class, and they are challenged.
Right off the bat.
Right off the bat.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of like laying down the gauntlet, like this is not a place.
Right.
You got to take it seriously.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
So the class that we sat in on was American con law, mm-hmm. constitutional law.
Yes.
Is it a required class?
It is a required class for political science majors.
Do you feel like it should be a required class for all citizens of the United States? When I was looking at your syllabus, mm-hmm. I was thinking everyone should have some basic understanding of what you're teaching in this class. Everyone should read a few Supreme Court cases. Everyone should understand how the culture weighs in on the court's choices, mm-hmm. and that it's not sort of in a vacuum.
Right. I think maybe not American constitutional law, because it can be a little specific, but certainly a national government class, a good national government class should be required for all Americans, I think, because they do get introduced to the different branches of government and how we interface with them, how we can interface with them, how we have and what we can do to make things more reflective of our interests.
Coming up next, Dean P. explains why being confused in class isn't necessarily a bad thing and how it can help students learn to build stronger arguments. We'll be right back with Kelly Corrigan Wonders. This episode was funded by the great people at the Arthur Vining Davis Foundations. You can learn more about this fantastic organization at avdf.org. The Arthur Vining Davis Foundations, investing in our common future. The 10% Happier podcast has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? Hosted by Dan Harris, a journalist who had a panic attack on national television and then set out on a journey of transformation. He's now on a quest to help others also achieve peace and happiness. Every week, Dan talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity in wide-ranging conversations that explore topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. The interviews cover everyone from Brené Brown to Alexander Draymond to Sam Harris. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. Find 10% Happier wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome back to Kelly Corrigan Wonders. I'm Kelly Corrigan, and I'm talking with Spelman College Dean Desiree Pettisclow. Before we jump back into that, though, I wanted to share a snippet of a conversation I had with one of Dean P's many inspiring students.
Hi.
Hello.
What's your name?
My name is Monique.
Where are you from?
I'm from Arlington, Virginia.
Give me three adjectives to describe what college has been like for you so far.
It's definitely sisterhood. Not everyone here is my sister, but I've definitely found people who I'll know for the rest of my life. A lot of growth, especially going to college during the pandemic. And then I would definitely say a lot of questions. Like, I've changed a lot about what I want to do in my life throughout the time here.
So, what did you think you wanted to do?
I thought I wanted to be a lawyer. And now I'm still kind of like in that realm. I'm a political science major, but I'm going to grad school instead. And like, I decided I didn't want to go to law school after I've spent so much money studying for the LSAT.
So what do you think you might try when you graduate?
I'm definitely going to go straight to grad school and get my master's in international relations.
Right on. That's so cool. What has been something very hard about college?
I think definitely just being with so many different people from so many different parts of the world. Like, yes, we're all Black women, but we have so many different personalities, so many different views on the world, and just all being in one space, I think, has definitely been hard, but it's really contributed to the growth aspect, and I've learned so much about myself because
of
it.
Do you guys live on campus for 4 years?
No. I lived on campus my freshman year, and then March we were kicked off.
Oh, right.
And so since my junior year, I've lived off campus in an apartment.
Okay. And what will you miss so much about college when it's over?
I'll definitely miss the sense of community, the sense of I can see my friends all the time because we're in the same city, and just the idea of when we're all together, there's nothing like it.
What's the best class you've taken so far? What was a mind blower?
I think I've taken so many amazing classes at Spelman, but I think my favorite one is I took it a part of my minor, African Diaspora Studies, and it was Black Queer Politics. And it was so amazing. I've never been in a space like that ever. And we read about like Audre Lorde and all these amazing things. And it was also very contemporary.
What was special about the space?
It wasn't even just a room full of all Black queer people. It was people who identified as like so many different things. But I think it was the best part about the space is everyone was really respectful. And I think that a lot of times when you enter spaces like that, that's not always the case.
Interesting. What's something about you that could never have grown or developed without college?
Oh, I definitely think my empathy towards others. I was always an empathetic person, but just seeing how many people's lives are so different, but we all ended up in the same space, I think that's something that I wouldn't have been able to learn without college, because where I grew up, we're all like kind of the same, like upper middle class, and it was very similar.
Uh-huh. That's great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And your students over the years, you've been at Spelman for 30 plus years. Mm-hmm. When your students look at the cases that you put in front of them, do they have a favorite and do they have one that makes them crazy mad?
Well, yesterday we got a little taste of that. They don't understand Roe versus Wade. Okay. And so we just skimmed the surface yesterday and we'll dig deeper. But they don't understand how it could have been, according to the new justices, settled law and then overturned. So they're having some difficulty with that. And so we'll dig deep into the time, the culture during Roe versus Wade and what was going on during the time, the history.
I mean, it should be a challenge to everyone.
Like, yes.
Because precedent, as you said yesterday in class, because precedent is sort of a bedrock value,
yes,
of the court, that anytime something upsets precedent, we should all wonder, like,
right,
what else does this throw into,
exactly,
into uncertainty? I mean, I think about it from a parenting point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I said, these are the rules of our house, and then we did those rules for 10 years, and then I said, those aren't the rules anymore.
Right.
You don't get allowance. And you're not allowed to watch television anymore. My children would go crazy. There would be total mutiny in my house.
Right. Yes. So they're having some difficulty with that. We always start with Mulberry versus Madison. You know, that sets the framework of how the Supreme Court can interpret the law. And it's the province of the court to do that.
And can you give me one sentence on what that case was about?
That's where Chief Justice John Marshall took the opportunity to say that it was the court who decided what law is or what the law meant. It was the court's province to interpret the law. Congress made the law, and it's the court's province. So he took that bold stand during the early days to say, this is the job of the court, not the job of Congress, not the job of the president.
What was at stake? What was the tiny consideration? Like, who was suing who?
Well, it was Mulberry who was suing to get his commission as a justice of the peace. But Congress passed a law that said that they could require the court to do something under their original jurisdiction. The original jurisdiction of the court is fixed. It's in the Constitution. So it would require much more than statutory law. It would require a constitutional amendment. And so that law passed by Congress was in direct conflict with the Constitution. And so the court said that anything that conflicts with the Constitution is null and void. And so they struck that portion of the Judiciary Act of 1789 that conflicted with the Constitution.
What is a court case that the kids love? Like, is there one that just always yields a great conversation and a sense of pride in the Supreme Court?
We have divided our American constitutional law class so that we can get a little bit more specific with the cases. And so the cases that involve Voting Rights Act are done in the civil liberties class. And I think some of those cases really spark their interest more than in my class, because what we're doing is we're looking at how case law has been used over time to either expand or contract the powers of the federal government, the branches of government.
Got it. Got it. You love pop quizzes?
I do love pop quizzes. It keeps the students on their toes, you know. Sometimes they come to class and they haven't read. And you can tell instantly when they haven't read. And
so, kids, you're not fooling anyone.
Right,
if you haven't read,
right.
It's like plain as day.
Right.
I noticed yesterday that there was a certain kind of decorum in your class. The first thing I noticed was that the kids say, yes, ma'am, yes, ma'am. But then I noticed that you say, yes, ma'am. How do you think about the learning environment and the context and the vibe of the space that you guys share?
Well, I want the students to be comfortable. Okay, one, I want them to be comfortable to know that they can express their thoughts about the cases. And if it's wrong, as I told them yesterday, we're not going to laugh at them. If it's wrong, this is a safe space. And so I respect their opinion. They respect my opinion. And we will learn American constitutional law together.
Do you find that each semester they teach you something?
Oh, most definitely. You know, sometimes I've missed something or I've forgotten it even. And they do. They remind me, oh, right, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That must be such a thrill if you love a subject to be able to spend 30 or 40 years in it and keep discovering little pockets of insights or new knowledge.
You know, and I love teaching so much, you know, because I work a full-time day, a full-time job, and then I go and teach a class. When I walk through that door, I am on to see them sitting there waiting for me, waiting to learn. That just lights that little spark in me, and I'm on it.
So even though you're a dean, you'll never stop teaching a class. I mean, that would be a tragedy for you.
Yes, that would be a tragedy for me. And you know, maybe one day I'll go back to the classroom.
Yeah.
Yeah, I intend to go back to the classroom to teach full time, yes.
I was reading your syllabus and I loved this line. This is not a lecture course. The student should not scribble furiously to record everything that the instructor says. The instructor may take both sides of an argument. This may cause confusion.
Yes.
How important is confusion to learning?
Well, I want them to be able to build an argument, okay? They don't have to agree. If it doesn't make any sense for them, I want them to build a strong argument to tell me why. I give the students my notes ahead of time, so they have my lecture notes. And so that way I'm able to play devil's advocate. You know, I know what the case says, and so I can start them thinking about something else. And if they haven't read, if they haven't reflected on the conceptual matter in that particular chapter, it will definitely confuse them.
Yeah.
Yes.
And maybe that's part of it. I mean, maybe as I'm a person who's written some books, and there's always these terrible periods where it's kind of like the all is lost moment. Like, I don't even remember what I'm doing anymore. I can't even remember why I was going to tell it in this order, or mm-hmm. why I even bothered to like flesh out this one story. Like, how does that plug into the whole thing?
Okay.
And so I think part of what you're offering is the repeated experience of making a mess and then mm-hmm. sorting it out.
Right, exactly.
You loved Perry Mason?
I did. Oh, every day my dad would pick us up, drop us off. He'd say, don't open that door for anybody. And we would sit in front of the television, at least through Perry Mason, and then we had to do our homework.
What did you love about Perry Mason?
Oh, it was just the drama of him solving the case, you know. I loved it. And you know, it had the same format for every show, but still there was something about the delivery, the argument that he made that just drew me in, you know. And so I sat from the time I was 7, I wanted to be a lawyer. I just had to be a lawyer. I wanted to be a Perry Mason. And even when I see some of the lawyers who attend my church and I see them in action, I want to be just like you when I grow up. They're very good.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's so stunning to see somebody really lay down an argument. I mean, it's like music.
Yes. Yeah.
What classes in college did you hate?
Oh, international relations. I hated international.
Why?
I just hated that class. I think I was so caught up in, you know, the American government side that I didn't understand how it all fits together. And it was a little later that, probably not until after I finished the international relations class, that I understood, you know, you can't do anything domestically without at least being mindful of the international. And so, yeah, I do understand how they go together much better now.
Yeah. One of the objectives of your class is to identify the basic ideas and values of the American legal system. And I was trying to think, what are the values of the American legal system? And the two I thought of were that you're innocent until proven guilty.
Yes.
And that you have a right to an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
What are some other values of the American legal system that you guys talk about in class?
We talk about ethical behavior because truth and justice are the American way. And so being mindful of the truth and behaving in ways that are ethical so that you don't take away from whatever it is you're doing.
Another item on course objectives mm-hmm. is to think critically about significant legal concepts and controversies. What are the big controversies that you guys cover?
In the first interpretations in the early days of the Constitution, commerce was interpreted to be very broad. And then we see during a period of dual federalism, we see the court interpreting Congress's power to regulate commerce narrowing some. And then we see the court taking a flexible view of Congress's commerce power. And so the students will sometimes struggle with that to see how the court vacillates depending on what's going on at the time. And so sometimes they have a little problem keeping up with that.
I think a young mind might hope or assume that the court should be more consistent decade by decade.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's one of those cold, hard realities that the court is made up of people and people are greatly influenced by the culture in which they were raised and operate within.
Right. And I think that's the first thing that students have to understand is that the justices are reflective of their environment and their beliefs.
As every one of us is.
Yes.
It's like it's painfully unavoidable.
Right.
That we are of our time and place.
Right, right.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite Supreme Court justice?
Well, we have our new justice, Justice Ketanji Jackson.
Yeah.
So we're certainly holding out good things for her.
Has she been to Spelman yet?
No, not yet.
She'll come, right?
Not yet. I'm sure she will.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Justice Brown, you're officially invited to Spelman. You could give the graduation address. I'm sitting here with two important people there. Yeah.
Yes, that would be wonderful. But yesterday, I suggested to the students that we should pray for the Chief Justice because in some ways, he's kind of lost his way. He is the chief, and so he guides the court. And I think what we saw with Roe versus Wade and his work, at least what we're hearing from behind the scenes, how he tried to get the court to rule not so radically right, and they did it anyway. He had no pull with those justices. And so I think Justice Roberts, who is a Yale alum, and I'm a Yale alum as well, so I have faith in
There's a lot of Yale alums. If you have faith in anyone just because they're a Yale alum, you're going to find yourself in some funny rooms.
No, I understand. No, I do understand. No, I do. But Justice Roberts, I think he wants to do the right thing. And so I'm hopeful.
Okay.
I'm hopeful.
I'll take that. I want to talk a little bit about your work as a dean. What do you do? Describe that part of your life.
I talk to a lot of students and parents about all kinds of things, classes, graduation. Yesterday, I even had one about parking, and I have nothing to do with parking at all. But that's, you know, that's okay. I was there to listen. So as part of my duties, I also chair the curriculum committee. And so we keep the curriculum fresh and innovative. That's probably one of my biggest jobs, is coordinating with the faculty on the curriculum committee.
Some people think that core curriculums are an expensive and roundabout way to get an education, and that because of the price tag, people should just come in, take the classes they want to take, and get out. How do you think about the value of core curriculum classes?
Well, I think they're very much needed because it helps the student be well-rounded. I would hate for a student coming in to be a political scientist and she doesn't take religious studies or some other humanities or history, just to dive straight into the political science and not understand those other factors that are playing into how the whole country is being built. So I think it makes us better thinkers. It makes us better communicators. We can understand issues from different perspectives. So I think the liberal arts education it's the best way to make well-rounded, intelligent, productive citizens.
Yeah, how do you think about the relationship between liberal arts and democracy?
You can't untangle them. Democracy assumes that we have well-informed citizens. And you can't be well-informed if you don't understand the nuances that might be underlying an issue. And I'm not saying you have to dissect it a whole lot, but just to even look at it superficially from different perspectives will help you to be a well-informed citizen, you know, so that you can understand that when you hear something on the radio or on the television that's crazy, you know, that it's just crazy, it makes no sense, and can't possibly be true.
What do you see in your students that gives you hope?
I see that spark, you know, that we're going to change the world. And that gives me hope. I know every day that I'm going to be okay, you know, because that's our future. And they'll be out there fighting for the right thing. I'm okay. Yes.
I'd like to pause the interview here just for a moment to share another short conversation I had with one of Dean P's talented students.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. What's your name?
My name is Shanique.
And where are you from?
I'm from Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, you are?
Did
you grow up always wanting to go to Spelman?
I did. It was my dream school, actually. I remember for the first time visiting when I was in, I want to say, fifth grade.
Uh-huh.
And it was just a wonderful experience, and I already knew that I wanted to attend Spelman. And here I am several years later at my institution, so.
Wait, did anyone in your family go to Spelman?
No. So I'm the first woman in my family to attend Spelman College.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Give me three adjectives to describe your experience so far.
I would say transformative, unique, and just simply astounding.
Yeah. What do you think some of the transformations have been for you?
For me personally, I would say meeting new people and just establishing new connections in my life. A lot of my friends I'm glad to have made. They've become a part of my family, in a sense.
And what do you think you'll do when you graduate?
I know I want to attend law school, like, straight through, rather than taking a gap year. So upon graduating, because I have the opportunity to graduate early, I did dual enrollment credits. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. So. What's a weird class you took that you really enjoyed? Like, you have a core curriculum here, right?
I do.
So was there something that you were forced to take that you thought, I'm not going to like this, and you turned out thinking, yeah, well, it's kind of worth it?
I would probably say national government with Dr. Crosby. She made it such a wonderful experience.
Uh-huh.
especially with like history, a lot of times it's associated with being boring. But I had such an enjoyable time in her class, especially with the different assignments we got to do.
Like what? Can you remember one?
I did a log that consisted of me writing different experiences, like current events in the world. And also, as they were associated to, like, different Black female leaders. So I really enjoyed doing that.
Who's your favorite Black female leader?
I would probably say Viola Davis.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love her so much.
Yeah. Name some more.
Lupita Nyong'o. Stacey Abrams, of course.
Spelman grad.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Good luck with everything.
What major, other than poli sci, of course, has been the most expanding for your students? What's a major that really expands their minds and their capacities to make change in the world after they graduate?
I think we have a couple. Comparative Women's Studies is one. They always see that as secondary, but I think women are the future and women will change the world. And I think once they understand all of those systems in place that impact us, and they learn how to work the system, then I think it really does open them up.
And multiply their capacity.
Oh, yes.
Because you got to understand where the wind in your face is coming from.
Right.
So that you can take a different path and get right there without a little less resistance.
Right. Yeah. I think environmental science and studies is another. Those are both very interdisciplinary majors. What we're seeing at Spelman, too, is an increase in students wanting the independent major.
Oh.
And this allows students to combine three or four different disciplinary areas and to craft their own major.
What do you wish you could tell every kid on day one that they would actually listen to? Like, you're coming into college. Let me give you a tip. I've been watching a lot of people go through this. Here's how you get the most out of it. What would you say?
Pace yourself. Sometimes the students want to do everything. And it's not good for them to try and do everything. You know, you see them with health issues, ulcers, migraines, you know, because they're just trying to do everything and they really need to practice self-care. And so I would tell them just to pace yourself. You'll get to it in due time.
How are the students of the last 5 years different from the students who came before them? Are they?
I think they are different. I think they may be a little bit more competitive. They want to do more.
They're more ambitious.
More, yes, thank you. They're more ambitious, yes. That's right, than some of my earlier students. Certainly they were ambitious, but I think they knew how to pace themselves, frankly. Uh-huh. They knew they couldn't do everything, but they could do this, their sister could do that, their other sister could do this, and together they were a force to be reckoned with. You know, it's hard getting them to realize that, you know, they can do two or three things very well, and that they don't have to do six to eight things not so well.
Yeah, and it's interesting to think about whether the most recent kids are more individualistic, mm-hmm. and the previous kids that you taught mm-hmm. were more collaborative.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're seeing?
I'm seeing that, yes. I can use, you know, Stacey Abrams as an example. She had her classmates with her every step of the way.
Mm-hmm.
They were all working together, you know, Stacey and Selena and others were there in my office when they were in college working together, and they're still working together for a common goal.
And yeah. Not so much right now.
It could just be hiding from me, but I don't see that as much now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What worries you about the current class of kids? Like, are you seeing, as we see in the media, that depression and anxiety are going through the roof? Are you seeing that in your office?
Yes. And we are working to help students to understand that there are resources that can help them. But, you know, sometimes they just won't reach out. They just withdraw. until it's almost too late.
Any other parting thoughts for us on this generation of kids and what they're getting out of college?
Well, they're getting what they need. In spite of all of it, I think the future is bright for all of us. We have some very talented young people coming through all of our colleges and universities.
Thanks, Dean P.
Thank you.
Great to have you.
Thank you.
Here are my takeaways from my conversation with Dean Desiree Pettisclo at Spelman. One, if you face the fact that good rhetoric can easily make information indistinguishable from misinformation, it gets easier to understand why voters sometimes vote against their best interests. Two, every woman in the Spelman dorms was raised differently, which makes living together hard and potentially transformative. Three, a good national government class should be required for every American. Four, even after 30 or 40 years of learning and teaching a single subject, it's possible to discover little pockets of new knowledge, and what could be more thrilling. Number five, part of what college offers students is the repeated experience of making a mess and then sorting it out in a safe place. Number six, it's one of those cold, hard realities that the Supreme Court is made up of people, and people are greatly influenced by the culture in which they operate. Number seven, you cannot untangle the liberal arts from democracy. Number eight, the advice Dean P. would like to offer every college student and maybe every one of us is listen to your body and pace yourself. If you enjoyed hearing from the young women at Spelman and you missed last Friday's For the Good of the Order episode, please check it out for a longer interview with these totally fantastic young women and a much deeper dive into their thoughts and feelings about college and beyond. Thank you to Dean Desiree Pettisclo and the young women who took the time to talk with me at Spelman College. Thanks also to the team at Kelly Corrigan Wonders. That's technical producer Dean Kateri and executive producer Tammy Stedman. Thank you so much to the Arthur Vining Davis Foundations for supporting this series. And finally, thanks to you all for listening. Please share this episode with anyone you know who's interested in Spelman or all-girls education. And if you have a moment, we would sure appreciate a review in whatever podcasting app you use. We'll be back on Friday with another For the Good of the Order, and on Sunday with a new Thanks for Being Here. Until then, I'll see you on Instagram at Kelly Corrigan. Thanks, everyone.